Janae, and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. with Courtney Cronin filling in for Chinne Agwemeke today, our ESPN Vikings reporter, kind enough to give us some time today. And Courtney, we got Game 6. All the news pretty much today centered in the state of Wisconsin, which has really been like a best of times, worst of times situation here for this city, or for this state, I should say.
Absolutely. The dichotomy between good news and bad news, where if you're a fan of any Wisconsin sports team like the Milwaukee Bucks, you're on the cusp of a championship tonight, first time in 50 years. And then also on the other end of the spectrum, Aaron Rodgers is trying to force his way out, which we've known for some time, but obviously the news today brings that back into the forefront. So happy and sad. I mean, I believe we call this, there's a word for it, where you can feel two emotions on the opposite side of the spectrum at the same time, a dialectic. That is what this very much is, the situation in Wisconsin.
That's how you can tell that one of us is a writer and a reporter and a serious journalist, and the other one is me. Now, the NBA Finals are on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight for Game 6. That was a great word. As Bobby Portis and the Bucks host Campaign and the Suns, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN Radio stations. And on that call, you will hear our next guest, John Barry, our ESPN NBA analyst, who is with us here now. John, we appreciate the time. How you doing, man?
What's up?
Not too much. Getting ready for Game 6 here, and I have to imagine, as they are probably already packing the Deer District outside, John, this is going to be one of the more insane environments that we see this postseason here. For the Phoenix Suns walking into this now, what's got to be the priority tonight? Where do they have to start if they're looking to come out of this with a Game 7?
Well, a couple areas. Offensively, number one, despite the fact that they were really efficient in Game 5. They shot 55%, made 13 of 19 threes. They're playing 1-0 in basketball. And after the first two games, Milwaukee, by design, has made them a one-on-one team. And basically, it's Devin Booker and Chris Paul playing one-on-one. The lack of ball movement from Phoenix has been evident. And Devin Booker's basically been superhero to get them close. I mean, his shot-making has been absolutely extraordinary to keep them close in the last two ball games. Now, can you rely on that here tonight on the road in an elimination game? Can he do that again just to keep you close? I don't think that's a great recipe. So they're going to have to get this ball moving. They're going to have to include Mikal Bridges, Crowder. Ayton's got to be more involved on the interior. It's going to be a group effort here tonight if they're going to get it done. And then on the other end, defensively, they let go of the rope in Game 5. I mean, Milwaukee shoots 71% in the second and third quarter, scored 79 points. They're out in transition. They're on the offensive glass. So a lot of areas Phoenix has got to get better defensively if they're going to have a chance to send this back to Phoenix.
And Chris Paul said just as much the other day. They're not the Houston Rockets. They are not an ISO ball team. Yet, like you mentioned, the ball movement and the assist numbers, just by and large, are down, and leading to a lack of three-point production. Where does that start tonight if they try to find their shot from behind the arc? Is that, you know, Chris Paul facilitating? Is it rely on Devin Booker? I know you mentioned Bridges, others, Jay Crowder in there too. I mean, who needs to take the reins there to try to get that part of their offense going?
Well, that's been the problem, because Milwaukee is switching all their screen and rolls, and that takes away the three-point shot. I mean, three-point shots, you get three-point shots by breaking down a defense and getting by your guy and making people help, and they've been unable to get by this team. Look, Milwaukee is a big, long, athletic team. I mean, across the board, they're terrific defensively. So if you can't get by a guy and force somebody to come help, those threes are going to be hard to come by. And, you know, you can also get him in transition. But the problem is Phoenix has taken the ball out of the rim, and it is very difficult to get up the floor that quickly to create some mismatches or create some open opportunities when you're taking the ball out of the rim. So it's a catch-22. You got to get some stops on one end, maybe get out in transition. Phoenix had zero fast break points two games ago and then gave up 21 to Milwaukee in the last. So they have to get stops. I think they have to play quicker, advance the ball up the floor, maybe even on makes. get the ball at the four quickly. Maybe you can get some mismatches in that way, and they can get some three-point shots. They shot it great in the last game, but they need to get more threes up.
Chenin Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to ESPN NBA analyst John Barry, who's going to be on the call for Game 6 in Milwaukee tonight. And JB, we've spent so much time this playoffs talking about the coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, Mike Budenholzer, here. For Monty Williams on the other side for the Suns, I feel like we lump so much of the responsibility onto Chris Paul and a lot of things. Is there any things that Monty Williams from the coaching side needs to own up on here or can do better for his team going into Game 6?
Don't take Devin Booker out of the game.
That
I think
works.
It's as simple as that. Their numbers when Devin Booker's on the floor decidedly different. Chris Paul is a minus 37 when he's on the floor without Devin Booker. So he's got to play. I mean, I think we saw Kevin Durant play three 48-minute games in the Brooklyn-Milwaukee series. Devin Booker's younger. He's healthy. I'm not taking him out of the game if I'm Monty Williams tonight. And I think you're going to see him play a darn near 48 minutes in this game if they want to bring it back to Phoenix.
We've talked a lot about Giannis Antetokounmpo on this show and what he needs to do to potentially solidify a finals MVP should the Bucks win tonight. But I'm wondering from your perspective of how you've watched his game evolve throughout this postseason. It feels like he's toned down the aggressiveness when attacking the basket on the other end. Usually he's getting called for an offensive foul. How has he reined that in when this is somebody whose most of his points are coming off fast breaks and getting into the paint, being able to control that so he's not in those situations as much?
Well, I think he's got a confidence level of the guys around him. Obviously bringing Drew Holiday in this year is another guy that can get it done offensively. And I don't think there's a reliance on him to have to go get 40 points for them to win. I think he's getting 32 just because he's Giannis and he finds a way to do that, whether it be in transition or the offensive glass. You know, he made some really tough step back shots the other day outside the paint, which he normally doesn't do. But yeah, there's just, you know, Chris Middleton's the guy they go to if they really need a basket to create his own. And he's okay with that. I mean, I love the way he's handled the media throughout these, you know, whatever, 10, 12 days that we've been in this, that he's just talking about being in the moment and he's got no ego and it's about winning. And he doesn't have to be the man. And I think he enjoys that. He enjoys the success of his teammates. And he's got some really good teammates that have really put yeoman's work in and had their moments of being great players at all times. And I mean, that goes to Bobby Portis, that goes to Pat Connaughton. Brooke Lopez at times. I mean, they have a deep team with a lot of guys that can make an impact. And, you know, you have to have a star that's willing to let that happen. And Giannis is certainly that.
Giannis has been that guy. And you're right. Those role players, a big game on the road, now get to go back to the friendly confines of their home arena tonight in front of everybody, including about 60,000 strong in the Deer District. JB, we appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Yeah, say a prayer that we get out of there safely, please, if Milwaukee gets it done.
Absolutely. No, like I say, we want everyone. That's been one of the things, Courtney, you and I were talking before the show, for the amount of people that we've seen out there in Milwaukee, a place that is really hungry for this moment here. It's been, I mean, especially in the context of what we've seen in other sporting events this year, really reassuring that we haven't seen much in the way of incidents yet. So we hold that holds true tonight, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to see the aerial view of how far this thing stretches out. 60,000 people when it was, what, upwards of 12,000 the other day? I mean, it's kind of crazy to think that that's going to be a quadruple tonight. And maybe some very happy Bucks fans. I believe Brady Street is one of the main streets in Milwaukee, so they might be celebrating on the bars, at the bars on Brady Street come 10 or 11 o'clock tonight.
I just feel like we're going to find some way, somehow, a Drake video comes out of tonight, right? Like, he's got to be somewhere in the mix on this. This guy knows no shame.
No, I mean, isn't it required for him to be courtside at, like, every game, like, potential, like, game elimination game in the postseason?
I think so. I think there's something written into his contract with the league or anyone else that requires him to come in and claim whatever team's about to do this thing. So we'll keep an eye out for that sighting tonight. But coming up next, as we look on the court at the end of this game, if the Bucks manage to get this done, who's hoisting the finals MVP for this team? Next on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
To John Barry, ESPN NBA analyst, for joining us ahead of tonight's Game 6. If you missed any of that interview, check it out in the Janae and Golic Jr. podcast. And while you're downloading, subscribing, rating, and reviewing, don't forget to tune into the Janae podcast, hosted by our very own Janae Agumake and fueled by Gatorade. We appreciate their continued support of women's sports journalists and athletes here at ESPN and everywhere. Whatever path you take to greatness, Gatorade is there to fuel it. Greatness starts with a G. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Courtney Cronin, our ESPN Vikings reporter, filling in for Janae Agumake here today. And Courtney, heading into tonight, we got Game 6 of the NBA Finals coming up on ESPN Radio. The first, by the way, I guess I forgot, just a testament to how good the Suns have been here. Their first potential elimination game in this playoff run. They were only down in their series in the first round against the Lakers. They were down 2-1. But besides that, they've led the way here. And Courtney, that alone is interesting to me with these teams. Just because this is a team without a lot of playoff experience, they've taken a lot of their cues from Chris Paul, and we've seen the cracks in that foundation. They're in an unfamiliar experience now in a do-or-die moment on the road here with their leader looking that way. Certainly doesn't smell good for them heading into this
one. No, I mean, four losses in a row to potentially end Chris Paul's first bid at a finals would really dampen his legacy. I'm going to say it. I know that he's played 16 seasons. He's been a multiple-time All-Star. He's in the conversation as one of the best point guards ever. But you've got to win that ring in order to be in that elite echelon. And just the way that they've played, like, it's either that the Bucks crack the code for this team, or it's a combination of Chris Paul's hand injury and what Devin Booker and the load that's been put on both of them and the shot selection and not getting help from teammates, you know, from the three-point line, things like that. It's kind of all become this perfect storm that comes to a head tonight in Milwaukee, where you have a lot of people who were saying Suns in seven, now saying Bucks in six, myself included in that mix.
Yeah, no, Courtney, you and me both. I was very much Suns in seven guy at the start of this series because I thought, like you just said, and I think Chris Paul, I know they haven't said it explicitly. I know he dodged questions about it even when asked after the game about that hand, but there's got to be something wrong here because this just looks like a completely different guy. And credit on that has to go partially to Drew Holiday, certainly, yes, for what he is as a defensive force out on the court. That's been a known during this entire thing. And so having him go and bother Chris Paul, the head of the snake here, is one thing. But he is still, by practice, by what he's done and produced in 16 years, I believe one of the top five point guards we've seen in terms of playing the game, even if the resume is not there. So I shudder to believe that we won't be coming out of this series and hearing kind of like the hockey playoffs where a guy has surgery on some injury the day after a series where he was given that, you know, lower body injury tag that we just shrug off and keep moving with.
Yeah, absolutely. And what Chris Paul has done this postseason, and there's always going to be the people who want to put an asterisk next to these playoffs because of the injuries to other teams, but injuries on other teams, and the fact that the Suns, for the most part, outside of Chris Paul missing a couple games, you know, in the Clipper series because of the COVID protocol and having to deal with the hand injury, I mean, he's been nothing shy of remarkable. And at this stage of his career, too, a young team that, you know, just kind of found its identity this year, like, they're going to be really good for years to come, and he's very much part of the foundation of that. I'd love to see it get extended to seven. I'd love to see Chris Paul and Giannis battle for finals MVP in the final game of the season, when that series would go back then to Phoenix, but I just can't see it happening.
No, I'm with you, Courtney. I think this series is over tonight. I think it is interesting figuring, because if this game went back to seven, I'd make a strong argument that Devin Booker would hands down be my MVP on the Phoenix side, mm-hmm, based on the way that this series has gone. Is it as cut and dry in your mind on the other side? If Giannis and the Bucks really do complete this, is the finals MVP already his, or is Chris Middleton have a legitimate stake to this?
Yes, to answer your first point, like, if the Bucks win tonight, there's no other choice but Giannis for finals MVP. Like, let's remember, we didn't know if this guy was going to even be able to play in the finals after he had an injury to his knee where his leg bent backwards in the Eastern Conference Finals. And then, you know, he's been at the center of their success this entire finals run. It's not like he's been a shell of himself and only playing at 60% or 70%. He's averaging 32.2 points per game, 13 boards, 5.6 assists on 60.5% shooting from the field. That's, like, not a great number, but somehow he's been able to get it done. You know, his free throws have been an issue. Yes, we know that. But he's still dominating the series on both ends. Best defensive player in the world, bar none. This whole thing has been predicated off of Giannis, but a little dark horse candidate here, because I know you mentioned Chris Middleton. If it were not Chris Middleton or Giannis, I think that you could, and I'm not doing this, but you could make the argument that Drew Holiday is the one who swung the series in favor of the Bucks, because of when Bud took PJ Tucker off of Chris Paul and put Drew Holiday on him as the main defender. After game one, the next three games, Chris Paul turned the ball over 15 times. That's the most over a three-game playoff stretch in his career since 2012. And he averaged 17 points, so roughly half of his game one output. I think that Drew Holiday was a major factor here in why the Bucks have gotten as far as they have. But to me, it's Giannis, and it's always been Giannis, if the Bucks win in six.
Courtney, I'm with you. I'm glad you brought up that with Drew Holiday, too, because the defense has certainly been the one constant through all this. We've seen him struggle offensively at certain times during this postseason run, but game three of this series, when the Bucks got back into this thing, a large part of it was the fact that you had Drew Holiday go 5-for-10 from three, like him finding that outside portion of his game, because him and Chris Middleton, like game five was the outlier, where we got all three of them to come together and do their best at one particular time. It was needed because it was on the road, but Drew's definitely been the linchpin. But I think you nailed it with the injury as the background of this, owning the dominant moments here, and not for nothing, like flipping the math in this series in a way that overwhelmingly skews in favor of the bigger, faster, stronger team. Like, the Suns learned what we learned in both Space Jams, which is that by and large, outside of a few freak instances, there is no substitute for being bigger, faster, and stronger than the people you're going up against. Like, Giannis Antetokounmpo versus the Suns in the last four games inside the restricted area has shot 85% for 78 points. The Suns as a team have gone 64% for 94 points. Like, Courtney, they just haven't had an answer for a guy that's been dominant on the offensive boards and has been able to live inside the painted area where they've only got DeAndre Ayton, who's even physically able to kind of be up to that task.
Yeah, and that's like what's been their Achilles heel. Like, I think that that's kind of what's caused them to run out of steam here, where, you know, it's almost like you were mentioning, like, the switch in numbers and all of that. Like, as they started, like, trending downwards in that direction, all those same things that you mentioned, but on the opposite foot for Milwaukee, they started figuring it out. Like, you know, Giannis at one point, you know, figured out, yeah, I shouldn't be taking all these jump shots. I shouldn't be taking all these threes. I should be going where I need to go, which is dominating in the paint, getting my points off the fast break, and you know, being that presence that he is on both ends of the floor. Chris Middleton, they needed him in so many respects to have the Chris Middleton game, yet his shooting efficiency at moments hasn't been great, but it's still been enough. And obviously they know now that they're confident in their choice of giving up all those draft picks to get Drew Holiday. Like, they have a great core here. It all clicked for all three of those guys that I mentioned on top of the role players. It all clicked at the right time, just as the Suns were starting to kind of fall apart there.
It did. Timing was perfect in this, in a lot of ways, the way it's been this postseason for Milwaukee and for Phoenix. But I'm with you, Courtney. I think Giannis, ultimately, if this game goes the way we believe it does tonight, he's your finals MVP, and we get to have a whole bunch of other interesting conversations about Giannis. But coming up next, this is easy for us to say here. All this confidence placed in Milwaukee in something that's been there the last few seasons, and it's always different the closer you get to home. So coming up next, we'll talk to someone who has grown up loving and rooting for this team, and see if the lemon booty is set in yet. It's Chenan Gould Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Chenan Gould Jr., the podcast.
Chenan Gould Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golick Jr., Courtney Cronin filling in for Chenan Igwumike today. And coming up next, we will get to some harsh words for a dish that I think is being slandered for no good reason by the world of baseball here. We will get to some of those harsh words in just a second. But reminder, the NBA Finals are on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight for Game 6 as Todd Day and the Bucks host Tom Chambers and the Suns, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN Radio stations. And joining us now on the Goodyear Hotline is ESPN college basketball reporter, ESPN radio host, and all-around good guy, Myron Metcalf. And Myron, I think I've associated so much of our conversations with things associated to Minnesota, where you reside now. I am correct now in discovering you were a Bucks fan here. So how are we feeling today, man?
It's an interesting day. I mean, you mentioned Todd Day. I had a Todd Day and Lee Mayberry. They were called the Mayday Boys back in the day. I had a bobblehead with them. If you went on like a certain night, you got a Todd Day and Lee Mayberry like joint bobblehead, man. So it's crazy to go from those days to having a chance to win a championship. It just feels kind of surreal, honestly. And certainly, I think if you are a Milwaukee fan of any sport, you got to see it to believe it. So I think there is sort of cautious optimism right now among a lot of Bucks fans.
Yeah, I mean, see it to believe it is one thing that we're going to be able to have a tangible takeaway tonight when there's 65,000 people in the Deer District, which its maximum capacity was 25,500 fans. So you're basically going to need to park in Whitefish Bay and probably, like, walk to Fiserv Forum if you want to be part of that tonight. I'm just wondering from a Milwaukeean, did I even say that correctly? From a perspective of somebody who's a native of this city, like, how has basketball in the fandom grown within the Bucks organization and just people? I mean, it doesn't feel like these are a bunch of bandwagoners who are all chanting Bucks and six, except me and Mike. But how, from your perspective, has that, you know, been kind of part of the fabric of the city these last couple of years?
I'm gonna ask a good question. I think the entire story of Milwaukee has largely been told nationally through the Milwaukee Bucks. Maybe the Brewers back in the day, but mostly through the Bucks, right? Like, so growing up, when I would tell people I'm from Milwaukee, if I traveled to different places, they'd be like, where? I'd be like, okay, north of Chicago, right? That's what you told people. So nobody even knew where it was. And our only identity was the Milwaukee Bucks. And after they win it in the 70s, you lose Kareem, right? One of the biggest trades in NBA history, and you just never get back to that same opportunity. You don't have that same momentum. So the 80s were tough. There were some good teams, just not good enough. I mean, I was watching games back in the old Mecca and in the Bradley Center. Ray Allen's there and Glenn Robinson. Michael Redd had a couple of years. So you always had a couple of years where you're like, okay, they might be pretty good, but you never got someone like Giannis and got to a point where you felt like you could be a champion. But then these last 2 years sort of made it feel like what we've witnessed already. You can beat the Toronto Raptors in 2019. You're up 2-0. You don't do that. All you got to do is beat the Miami Heat to advance and have a chance to go to the finals. Last year in the bubble, you can't do that. So the last couple of years have made it seem like maybe they're not going to get over the hump. So I think it's been a huge roller coaster for anybody associated with Milwaukee because, like, this is our identity. If you say Milwaukee, what do people know across the country, around the world? They know Giannis now. They know the Bucks, and they don't know much else about the city.
Myron, you mentioned Giannis, who's been around here for a while, so he's certainly not the different factor. We can talk about Drew Holiday, who was one of the acquisitions that was brought here to help facilitate, to help grow what was around Giannis, to make sure that he felt good in his decision to stay here. Was there a point this season, though, where it felt different, where you finally said, okay, this is why we're going to be able to get over the hump?
Well, I mean, I think looking at the West, and Anthony Davis not being healthy, and you know, you knew the Clippers weren't going to be at full strength. So seeing how the kind of dominoes fell there, and then you end up playing the Nets team that's not full strength. So I think it kind of felt like you never want to see injuries ever, but it seemed like things were kind of falling in Milwaukee's favor. And I think like the adversity they faced, beating that Nets team with KD doing what he was doing, and then you got to face the Atlanta Hawks team where Trae Young is trying to pull off a miracle. I think that adversity is helping them now. Like nothing really intimidates them, and I think that's what you've seen through these playoffs. So for me, it was honestly through the playoffs. The Bucks have been a great regular season team for the last 3 years, one of the best in the NBA. That part's not new. It was what they were going to do in the postseason. So to watch them fight through that adversity and get to this moment, Giannis goes down, they're still fighting, Chris Middleton stepping up again and again, Drew Holiday doing what he's doing, especially on the defensive end, it just kind of felt like it was Milwaukee's year. And then I think after the 2-0 lead for Phoenix, they come back in game three, and I just felt like that was the turning point. Phoenix did what they did in games one and two, but now it's Milwaukee's show, and it's been that way since then.
settle this for us. If they win tonight, Giannis is the runaway MVP, right? Or does Chris Middleton have a chance?
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, you would think Giannis, just based on how people vote, I mean, Giannis to me has been the one who's had the big games throughout this stretch. I mean, remember, Chris Middleton has had some rough moments. I think it's going to be Giannis, but let's say Chris Middleton comes out and has 40 points in a game-winning effort, game six, maybe he has a chance. But I think the cool thing about Giannis is it won't matter. You know, I think he's one of those guys who just wants to see everybody shine, and this elevates him to a different level. I mean, this is all of the haters of Giannis. He wins this tonight, and you have to put him among some of the greats.
Jhené Engold Jr. talking to Myron Metcalf on the Goodyear Hotline. And Myron, I don't want to speak any bad juju into the universe here, but I have to ask the question. If this were to somehow go awry, if the Suns were able to get out of Fiserv Arena, get this to a Game 7, and win this Finals, for Milwaukee, for fans of the team, for the way that we cover them, what does the story become around this Bucks team here as we go into an NBA season next year where we expect more of those bodies that you mentioned to be healthy and back on the court?
So you're saying if what happens tonight, you know, basically what always happens to Milwaukee teams, I would say, you know, you'd start the timer on Giannis. Because to me, like, when does Giannis get a better opportunity than this year? The Supermax is nothing. A bunch of players have gotten out of their Supermax contracts. They've made moves. We've watched James Harden and Kyrie and Chris Paul and Anthony Davis, all these great players, demanded trades. They got out of town. So to me, if they don't win tonight, if they don't win this series, I should say, then I think you have to wonder, does Giannis stick around for the full 5 years of the Supermax, which doesn't kick in until next year? So I think that, to me, would be the story. Is Giannis in a place where he can win it all? It would feel a lot like, to me, LeBron James, you know, one of his last playoff series where he takes off the jersey in Cleveland and tosses it into the trash or into the laundry basket in this sort of symbolic moment. I think that's how it would feel, because the East will get tougher and the West is certainly going to get tougher too.
Myron, I'm going to make sure that they scrub that portion of things from the podcast here so we don't have that negative energy out in the universe for you heading into this all-important night. So again, we got Game 6, we got a packed Deer District, and we have Myron Metcalf, who, if you like some of them here, you're going to get more of them. He's going to be co-hosting with us Thursday here on ESPN Radio. Myron, we appreciate the time. Enjoy the game tonight. We hope everything goes your way in all of this, and we hope to have a happy Myron Metcalf on Thursday.
Fingers crossed, man. Fingers crossed.
There we go. Awesome stuff. Myron Metcalf, our ESPN college basketball reporter and host here on ESPN Radio. All right, coming up next here, strong takes on regional chili from baseball announcers on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Jhené Engold Jr., the podcast.
Jhené Engold Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., ESPN Vikings reporter Courtney Cronin, been kind enough to fill in and hang out with us today, hanging out in place of Jhené Egwumike. We had a great bunch of guests come in over the course of today. Miren Fader came in, writer and reporter for The Ringer, also the author of the book on Giannis Antetokounmpo that's going to be coming out in early August. She talked to us about some of the origins, some of the things that have made Giannis into the man he is today. We also talked to Matt Schneidman, athletic reporter covering the Green Bay Packers, who are on the sad side of Wisconsin for today's events. And John Barry and Myron Metcalf stopped by, ESPN NBA analyst and college basketball reporter, respectively, to get us ready for what's going down at Fiserv Arena tonight, Game 6 of the NBA Finals. If you missed any of that, make sure you check out the Jhené Engold Jr. podcast wherever you get it. Download, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. Let's take you home as we get up to tonight's coverage of the NBA Finals on ESPN Radio as we keep that same energy. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Jhené Engold Jr.
Courtney, we've heard a lot of news about the upcoming Olympic Games as it pertains to COVID-19 cases being the reason athletes can't go. Well, we had news coming today that six Polish swimmers had to return home from the Tokyo Olympics due to an administrative error by the Polish Swimming Federation here. They were forced to return after their board apparently did not understand the number of members of the team that they could get away with sending to the games here. According to an inexcusable error, the athletes have rightly called for the entire board to resign, but that doesn't even feel like enough penance for this.
I mean, The qualifying rules state very clearly that you can send 17 swimmers to the games. They sent 23. How is that a clerical error? Like, how does that happen? Does somebody not know how to count or math? Like, how did this get past multiple people? I really don't understand that.
It is amazing. It's that reminder that I've always said, you need someone at the end who wasn't paying attention to anything to come and look at the details of the situation, like a snarky millennial. Because anyone with eyes would have noticed this. The Polish swimmer said, quote, recent incidents have destroyed the trust. Several of us had to come back to Poland because of the neglect, and our dream of becoming Olympians is taken away with us. So your heart goes out to those athletes, and certainly hope, I mean, they're, sadly, it doesn't seem like there is a way to make this right for the people involved that were wrong. It's just making sure this doesn't somehow happen again. Now, in the good news department here, keeping that same energy, ESPN's College Game Day has announced the first 2 week sites for College Game Day. And week zero, Courtney, pretty cool one, going to be in Atlanta as we've got a little MEAC and SWAC action here. HBCUs hosting and kicking off in Atlanta the college football season. We're going to have Alcorn State and NC Central football starting college football's year off.
I mean, I think it's a great way to get into the season. For those who college football fans who don't know about the aura of HBCU football, it is a sight to see. It's pomp and circumstance like I've never witnessed before when I covered it in Mississippi. It's the marching band. It's the swag that these teams bring out onto the field. And being able to see this highlighted on national television with game day is great. I mean, I know that Stephen A. Smith, because of his ties to HBCUs and the entire First Take team, they've done this for basketball before, where they've honored in the month of February, in Black History Month, they've honored a new HBCU every week. I like seeing this extended into college football. And I know we talked about Deion Sanders on this show earlier and that he doesn't believe that HBCU schools and football programs get enough media attention. Well, I think that this is a good start, more than just being in the news because he's upset about somebody calling him Deion instead of Coach Prime.
Yeah, these are the things to focus on, because
exactly,
as we talk about expansion in college football, Courtney, all these different things, it's all predicated on forcing us, the governing bodies of the sport, the largest entities in the sport, forcing us to talk about the full complement of college football. It's so big and broad. We focused on such a narrow sect. And so to see HBCUs getting the coverage they deserve, group of five teams, it all creates the best environment, or closer to the best environment possible for college sports. But we can't finish today off without getting to this. Gary Cohen on SNY, on the broadcast last night, Major League Baseball, over a photo montage of this, talked about his disdain for Skyline Chili. Listen to this monster.
This is the local delicacy known as Skyline Chili, the five-way with the spaghetti and the beans and the cheese.
Five-way.
First, the disgusting chili gravy.
And what do you put on
the onions?
You put some mustard or something?
No. Wait a second. After the onions comes the cheese, and that's what makes it the five-way. Here we go. Here's the cheese. They put like 10 tons of shredded cheese on there, and this is supposed to be food that you actually eat.
Now, does the cheese melt, or is that a...
Ronnie, have you ever had Skyline Chili?
I have not.
I would recommend...
Not having it, or...
Well, no, you need to try everything once.
Okay,
right?
All right.
It doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. Try it once, and then you'll never eat it again.
That was Gary Cohen, the voice of the Mets on SNY. I don't know who peed in his Skyline, Courtney, but he needs to fall back on this one. It's perfectly acceptable delicacy.
It's great ballpark food. I've had a couple Skyline chilies in my day at the Great American Ballpark. You wash it back with a Bud Light, and you're good to go. I mean, what's not to love? It's chili on top of noodles. It's not that serious. It's really not bad ballpark food either.
It's chili on top of noodles with cheese on top. Stop me if that's some sort of affront to mankind here, Gary. You could save that one. We'll see if Spain and Fitz can hold it down up until Game 6 of the NBA Finals next.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.